presents the News Quiz with your chairman, Barry Took.
Well, hello and welcome to the last in the present series of the News Quiz. This week we're in Durham, and because of that, we start with a cutting from the Bedfordshire Herald, read by Charlotte Green.
Sex crimes are on the increase in beds.
Thank you, Brian Butler of the Isle of Wight, for sending us that. Now, let's meet the team. Should we welcome, please, on my right, Francis Ween and Tony Hawkes. Facing them, on my left, Alan Corran and Julia Langdon. Before we start round one, here's a piece from the Lancaster Guardian.
Routine operations did not take place at the Royal Lancaster Infirmary on Wednesday morning as part of a process of maintaining and improving standards.
Well, thank you, Elizabeth and Hugh Roberts of Lancaster, for sending us that. Francis, your turn for the first question, and it's this. Who took his cards after taking the biscuit?
I think this is this week's sleaze person, yes, or one of this week's sleaze people, Mr. Neil Hamilton.
Quite right.
Who was, well, one can only say sacked. He was said to have resigned, but if you see his letter to John Major saying, I don't want to resign, but I seem to be resigning, I think you can take it he was sacked for not declaring that he'd had a British Rail chocolate biscuit on his room service at the Ritz in Paris, courtesy of Mr. Mohammed Al-Fayed, who, of course, is the most upright citizen and is now terribly indignant. He says, I tried to bribe all these politicians and they didn't deliver, and I think it's an affront to morality.
I think that sums it up awfully well. You're absolutely right. This is Tory Minister Neil Hamilton, who resigned on Tuesday amid the worst sleaze scandal to hit the party since, well, since Monday. Before being forced to stand out, Mr. Hamilton had been responsible for business ethics. Another couple of months in the job, it would have got rid of them completely. Tony, good to have you with us again.
Thank you.
Your question is this. Who got top billing among the peaceful shifting sands?
Oh, well, I would think this would be President Clinton, who gracefully turned up to the peace treaty between Israel and Jordan after 46 years at war. Now, he didn't really have that much to do with masterminding, I don't think. But the most significant thing about the whole peace treaty was it took place at 1 p.m, which is the hottest time of the day in Jordan. And the reason why it took place then was so that President Clinton could be on breakfast television in America. Presumably the reason why he wanted peace was because a lot of wars take place out of peak viewing hours.
This refers to the Middle East peace deal attended by United States President Clinton. In his new role as international statesman, Bill Clinton made a speech quoting, Blessed are the peacemakers, for they made a great version of Ferry Cross the Mersey. I don't mind waiting, it's worth it. The only surprised non-attendee at the celebrations was Yasser Arafat, who said that the last time he went to one, he had to help with the washing up, and they kept drying his dishes on his head. Two in one answer, there you go. Julia, welcome to the programme again. Whose new motto is, Seek and you shall find benefits?
Ah, well, everybody was trying to find benefit this week. I think the Labour Party was in a much advertised attempt trying to redefine its policy on social justice. Is that it?
No, it's not, actually. It's the other party.
Ah, well, and well, I was going on to say, actually, Barry, that the other party, knowing that this was going to happen, meanwhile, decided that the unemployed were not sufficiently close to starving to death, so they thought they would redefine the way they organised unemployment benefits. So instead of allowing people to claim the dole for a year, they decided to shorten it to 6 months.
Quite right, well answered. This refers to Peter Lilly, who plans to introduce a job seeker's allowance. Anyone who finds themselves out of a job will have to sign a job seeker contract. First one's in the post to Mr. Neil Hamilton. Care of the Harrods Suite, Ritz Hotel Paris. Mr. Lilly's co-author is Michael Portillo, and they've been hard at it on the job. I'm sorry, on the job seeker agreement, which will also change benefit rules. Anyone with savings above £8,000 will receive nothing. But what's $8,000 these days hardly buys 4 MPs, does it? Alan. Oh, no, no, please. Alan.
What? Is it a piece of music, Barry?
Yeah. How about this for a piece of music?
And the perverted fear of violence chokes the smile on every face. Common sense is ringing out loud. This ain't no technological breakdown. Oh no, this is the road to hell.
That was the road to hell. And your question is, what should be pumped up at the double 10 years down the road?
Yes, I couldn't work any of this out. I've been spending money down the years buying this car and that, and every one I get is supposed to be better than the last one, and the one I've got now is state-of-the-art, and it will kill me just by opening the door. It's maybe about the Royal Commission as well as unleaded fuel. There's a Royal Commission saying we should all have to walk and not build any more roads, and the Department of Transport can have all these grass verges, having already concreted over most of southern and indeed northern England to make way for cars. Apparently every mile of road that we build exponentially increases the number of cars that are going to use it. So the more roads we have, the less room there is. I don't understand that kind of logic. But the cars we have got are killing us because all the wonderful super unleaded green petrol poisons you. It's full of benzene. It's called things like aromatics, which I thought was something Lady Di did in the privacy of her own bedroom. But even therapy doesn't work if you're a driver. It kills you.
Right. You're absolutely right, of course, in every detail. This is the Royal Commission report that predicts petrol prices should double in the next 10 years, which was criticised by the petrol pricing watchdog, Ofrip. And the scores, because we're in Durham, are 4-4 at the end of the first round. Well done. Mind you, they're always 4-4 after the first round of the show. Anyway, we start round two with an item from the Westmorland Gazette.
Completion of the alterations to Kendal Police Station cell block have been delayed because the fire regulations officer was insisting that crash bars were put on the doors to allow easy escape in the case of fire.
Thank you, Adrian Legg of Windermere, for sending us that. Francis, your question again. What father figures don't add up?
This isn't the weekly question about the Child Support Agency.
It is.
I've stopped reading stories about the CSA because it always seems to be the same story and it just sends me to sleep. But it's something to do with the Child Support Agency is having the usual trouble. Rogue fathers not paying their maintenance. And some people are having a go at the CSA.
It could make it,
that sort of stuff. I'm sure Tony can fill in the details.
Well, that's a broad brush. You could make it a question about the Pope, couldn't you? Father figures, because
his
book's selling terribly well, isn't it?
Is he a father?
Holy Father?
Well, actually, not holy.
Isn't he?
No, I think he's only partially a father.
Only partially.
I don't think he's a father. He suffers from the same problem as that panda that got sent back from London Zoo, I think.
The question is not really about the father. It's about the agency itself, which is getting everything wrong. Yeah. 85% of its statistics are all to cock, as it were. I mean, it's, they're rubbish. They have no idea what they're doing.
Quite true.
As we knew. My children are listening. Tuck yourselves up tonight, because I'm in Durham. But I'm not telling you where.
It's all about the Child Support Agency that in its first year got over half the sums wrong when assessing cases. The programme may be a little too old for the purpose. Every time it's interrogated to find if there's a record of someone's father, it comes up, ask Lloyd George. It's either him or he probably knows him. Tony, your question again. Who is playing the name game?
Ah, well, I think this would be a reference to Prince Charles, who's realised that the royal family is having a few problems at the moment, really. And as a visionary, he's seen a way out of the problem to lead them into the 21st century and cure all their problems simply by changing their name from Windsor to, was it Mountbatten Windsor?
No, Sellafield.
But what a brilliant idea, really, when you've had all these problems and these novels published. Simply just change the name. You know, they might think it's different people or something like that. But I think if you're going to have a double-barreled name, you may as well have one that's more suitable to the predicament they're in, really. Maybe something like Numbers Up might be quite...
How about Parker Bowles?
I think he considered that one before. And, or they could be the House of Windsor Davis, couldn't they? It ain't half hot, Mom, or something like that.
This is Prince Charles, who is planning to change his family name to Mountbatten Windsor, the length some people go to avoid the Child Support Agency. He claims the change wouldn't affect his sons, and he would still call them by their usual names, Singamy and the other one. Meanwhile, on a recent visit to Wales, the taunt, "Where's Diana gone? Far, far away," came out from a raucous extremist, or as Charles calls him, Daddy. Julia, here's a piece of music for you. Well, that was the Jam singing Going Underground, and your question is, what tunnel vision didn't foresee a collapse? Not the most difficult question of the week.
I think there's a plot afoot amongst the authorities. What I'm not certain about is whether they're trying to stop us leaving or trying to stop the tourists coming. Not only can you not get the Channel Tunnel train out of Waterloo, but it's very, very hard to get out of Heathrow these days. They're busy tunnelling onto the runway. Actually, a friend of mine who arrived this week was told as their plane landed they were sorry they were late, but there was a hole in the runway. There's a tunnel collapsing and everything's fallen into it, but nobody noticed at Terminal 3.
Right. It does refer to the tunnel collapse at Heathrow Airport, which caused miles of traffic jams on the M4, had flights delayed for hours on end, and meant there was nowhere to park. BAA were happy to be able to report it was business as usual. Investigators aren't exactly sure what happened, but they have taken away a vaulting horse, which was which was found in Terminal 3 after a group of passengers stuck there were spotted shuffling about, dropping dirt out of their trousers. Michael Atherton was not involved. Alan, whose Girl Friday proved to be a cult hit?
Girl Friday. Cult hit. This is some religious
question.
We
know. Over here.
I'm going to turn over to my own Girl Friday here, who has written on this thing, G. F. I didn't understand any of that at all.
It's this person who works for Sherry Blair, who turns out to be the Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh in disguise, the person who was exposed by the Sun as a nude model a couple of weeks ago. And is now... This is all true. Don't deny it.
I know it is. I have it written down in front of me.
She was a pornographer. She was a nude model. Not a porn model. Same thing. She was a nude model.
An enthusiastic nude.
Yeah, appeared in Penthouse. This was all out of the week of the Labour conference. And anyway, this week it turns out she's a member of Exegesis. Right. A cult run by a man called Robert Daubigny, if you really want the details.
Oh, that's wonderful. Brilliantly answered.
Did you get paid to advertise all these people?
Well, they have members everywhere, Exegesis, and you can never guess who's a member, and I'm not prepared to say whether skin. I am or not.
I thought Exegesis was a skin complaint.
Oh, also, could I...
Do we know what this cult do? Do they all get together and...
They scream. They get together in rooms and they scream a lot.
Because that cult of the solar temple thing where they all got together and killed themselves or were murdered, I always thought it would be a bit of a bugger if that was the first meeting you'd gone to. I like to keep an open mind about these things. I'll just pop along, you know. I'll give it a go. I'll give it one go at least.
Just to keep the record straight, this is Sherry Blair's personal assistant, Carol Kaplan, who once belonged to a bizarre mind-bending cult, but then she left the Young Socialists. Throughout the 80s, the cult preached a doctrine of ritual self-humiliation, or as it became known, Neil Kinnock's election policy. The scores have changed slightly because Alan and Julia are 7, but Francis and Tony have leapt into the lead with 10. Francis, you've done so brilliantly up to now. Here's a quite difficult one for you. Whose silver award pointedly went adrift for some time?
Yes, well, that's the end of our winning streak. Whose silver award
pointedly silver went award, adrift? Adrift.
Adrift? Mm-hmm. As in boats?
No, as in...
As in drift. For the benefit of listeners at home, Barry has just fallen backwards off his chair, clutching his stomach. Well, are you any the wiser, Tony?
I've got a bit of a theory.
Go on.
Is it to do with some sort of Zulu spear that was found?
Yes, it is.
I'm not sure the details, but I think it was awarded to some kind of lieutenant in one of the wars in South Africa, and they found this spear and given it to the family, and that's about as much as I know, really. Rorke's Drift is the drift part of it. Yes. Was the place where it happened.
Very good.
But
I don't know. Worked out.
Right.
Excellent. Yes, you got your marks for that. This is all about the discovery of a silver assegai given to Rorke's Drift commander, Lieutenant John Chard, by Lieutenant Gonville Bromhead. Bromhead was played in the film Zulu by Michael Caine, who commented on the previously unknown spear. Not a lot of people throw that. Back home after the battle in 1879, Chard got the VC and the assegai, while due to a slight mix-up, Gonville Bromhead won Dorset's Best Kept Village Award. Tony, genius that you are, have a listen to this.
Images of broken life which dance before me like a million eyes. They call me on the run across the universe. Haunt me under like a restless wind inside a letterbox. They tumble blindly as they make their way across the universe.
Well, that was the Beatles. Slightly under the weather by the sound of it, singing Across the Universe. And the question is, what universal truth may be lying about its age?
They've been looking through the Hubble Space Telescope again, the best thing to do with a telescope, really. And they've found definite proof that the universe is less than 12,000 million years old. Unfortunately, this kind of clashes with the definite proof they have that it's also 16,000 million years old, at least. So they're in a bit of trouble, really, because they've got sort of 4,000 million years difference, which they don't really know what to do with. Really. So not that that's a big problem. The trouble is, when they're looking through it as well, they also discovered that Zsa-Zsa's Gabor is 2,000 million years old. As opposed to the 4,000 million that they previously thought. Has she had a facelift, do you reckon? I don't know. It's like there's a winch around the, you know.
This is all about the Hubble Space Telescope, as you so rightly say, Tony. It seems to prove the impossible in that the universe is 4 billion years younger than the objects in it. This is known to scientists as the Michael Foot wardrobe effect. Julia, your question again. Who banked on a result in a game of two mistresses?
Ah, there was a gentleman who not only had a wife but had two mistresses.
Right.
Now, he had a wonderfully appropriate name, which I'll remember in a minute. Ah, his name was Doughty.
Undoubtedly it is.
I remembered it was appropriate. He had a wife, two mistresses, and a football team.
Quite right.
And he liked to take them all on Concorde to exotic sunspots, but he did it on, ladies and gentlemen, your and my bank account, or at least he falsified checks. And they banged him up for it. Is that right?
That's absolutely right, yes. This is the TSB manager, Graham Doughty, who stole £500,000 to support a wife, two mistresses, and his local football team. So it really is the bank that likes to say yes, yes. Explaining his exhausting diet of infidelity and Sunday League soccer, the banker, said if he was lucky, he got an orange at half-time. He didn't say what happened at the football, right? The judge at Stafford Court sentenced Doughty to 2.5 years hard rest. Alan, where will computer literacy improve to a degree?
There's a crackpot called David Barron, who is a professor at Southampton University, who came up with this wonderful line saying, this is wonderful for the future of education. No student will ever have to come to a lecture again, and teachers won't have to stand up and teach, because they're all going to be on the international super electronic highway. and be able to do their degrees at home. Really ghastly idea that no student will ever turn up at university again. I don't think there's a great deal more to say about that. I wrote 800 words about it in the Times. And I, unlike you, I can't recycle my old jokes, because they're not as good as yours. Sex was better than it was. I mean, he actually made a point of this, that sex was better than it was when we were all at university, because we have a thing called internet dating, so that the superhighway is sort of reaper barn, and you poke in, I'll rephrase that, you put in this floppy disk, which rapidly...
Oh.
I didn't write any of that down in a family newspaper. You put this stuff in, and then you can get any woman in the universe, which is very good for students.
It's all about the new university scheme that will mean students don't have to turn up for lectures. It's as well to have it made official at last. Southampton University's new BSc course in information engineering will be taught via the internet, meaning students can save time by logging on at home as soon as they get up and then spend the rest of the afternoon learning via a screen. And the score at the end of the third round have stayed more or less stable, but have moved on a little, because Alan and Julia are 11, but Francis and Tony are still in the lead with 14. Before we start the final round, here's a piece from the Edinburgh Evening News.
A Swedish taxi driver who left the meter running while having sex with a female customer was jailed for 3 years for billing her for £5,600. The 34-year-old driver said the charge included sex 25 times plus a 25% sales tax.
Let me guess who I had in the back of the cab.
Well, thank you to everyone that sent us that. We got them all over the place. A lot of people suggesting they should go to Sweden for their holidays. However, Francis, listen to this.
Where the painted desert as you go by looks like a rainbow in the sky. The cactus blooms in the early morning sun. Where the night winds sing and eagles fly, clouds paint pictures in the sky. The coyote's howl tells you when the day is done. Coming home this time I'm gonna stay.
That was Going Home by Elvis Presley, of course. And the question is, who failed to pander to the maternal instinct?
This is the former Prime Minister, Sir Edward Heath.
Yes, yes.
Who has been put into a crate and shipped off to China because of his refusal to breed. I think you'll find. They've tried every inducement, you know, thrown him bits of bamboo, but he refuses to have any children. Nothing interests him in that department. There's this panda also called Ming Ming, who's a very good friend of his, who came over from China with Edward Heath about 3 years ago.
Right.
And Ming Ming isn't breeding either. Perhaps the two facts are not unconnected. So Ming Ming and Ted Heath have both let us down very badly, and Ming Ming is being sent home to Peking, whereas Ted Heath has gone off to Salisbury.
This is Ming Ming, the giant panda, who was sent back to China after failing to become pregnant at London Zoo. Ming Ming, that's Chinese, but not tonight, dear, I've got a headache. There's such a low sex drive that she gets abusive mail from Cliff Richard. Tony, where did a traffic cone indicate a green light for a red light?
Yes, this is a cracking story, this one. This is about a man who was charged with running a brothel in a suburban area from his own house. And he was described in the article I read as being a bit hard up. So, he charged £60 for sex with his wife. Now, one wonders whether he explored all the other options of raising a bit of cash, like a bit of decorating or bar work or something. But selling your wife for £60, you know, fairly major step he'd taken there, isn't it? But the interesting thing is, to signal that his wife was ready and willing, as it were, he would put a traffic cone outside his house. Now, this was a stupid thing to do. Where are potential customers going to park? They'd have to park right the way up the other end of the road, and then by the time they walked back, they might have gone off the idea. And also, what happens if drunken students come by as well? Because they will have to put it on a bus shelter. And God knows what services his wife would be expected to perform as a result of that thing.
This was businessman Gwynford Griffith, who ran a brothel from his suburban house and put a traffic cone outside to indicate when his wife was open for business. Neighbours complained about a stream of clients who saw the cone and then looked for a sign that read, "Full works ahead." Mr. Griffith was fined £740 for taking an immoral income and another 50 for impersonating a government minister. Alan, where can you be floored by an historic find?
Not very far from here, actually. This is the Brethren of Mariners of Trinity House, Newcastle-on-Tyne, who want to change their lino, because it's got holes in it. And if you get people in for a bit of a knees-up, you don't want them going down by the stern when they're doing a hornpipe. So they want to change the lino. English Heritage. English Heritage have come in and said, that's extremely rare lino. And while you're at it, that very nice angle poise lamp is pure 1973, and that G-plan commode you can't move. It turns out that you can't even rip lino out now without English Heritage coming in. It means that nothing is safe. No, but it changes the whole future of interior decorating. I mean, if you put in those low-flush suites, English Heritage will come in and say, "What about them eye systems, that lovely chain, that big thing like a squash ball that hits you on the ear when you bent down? You've taken that out. You'll have to put that back." The whole country's going to the dogs, and those prats are wandering around Newcastle saying, "You've got to keep the lino." It's very sad if you're a mariner.
This is the world's oldest lino, which has gone on display in Newcastle, along with some pre-Raphaelite Tupperware and a piece of Neo-Georgian formica. The lino, which was laid in a seaman's mission, is considered to be a work of art. It must be good, because wherever you go, the cigarette burns seem to follow you around the room. Before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the teams have brought along. Francis, have you brought a cutting for us?
I have, Barry, yes.
Good.
It's from the Sun newspaper. Well, actually, it's from the Sun.
Everyone a winner.
And it's bang up to date. Appeared on Thursday this week, hot off the press. It's a story that says, a woman who claims President Bill Clinton sexually harassed her said yesterday she will prove her allegations by describing his manhood. Paula Jones, 29, said, I signed an affidavit outlining distinguishing features of his private parts which will stand up in court.
Thank you, Francis. Tony.
Yes, this is not really a clipping from a newspaper, but it's a bit of a packet of some sleeping pills that I've got here. They say clinically proven nighttime sleep aid. And the directions say 2 tablets to be taken 20 minutes before going to bed or as directed by a doctor. And it says, warning, may cause drowsiness.
Oh, well done, Tony. Alan.
Well, being the end of the series, I actually have 3 that I found rooting around in the bottom of the sock, which I won't be able to do for the next series, because they're all papers over the last month. There's a touching story from the Surrey and Hampshire Star, which says, Surrey Heath Borough Council want an HGV driver operator for their cesspool emptying service. Must have a clean licence. From the Yorkshire Post, she was asked if she had anything to say before sentence was passed. Mrs. Buckingham told the court, I have worked for British Rail for 15 years. I am very sorry and ashamed. And there's, well, you take your pick from these. One from last 2 nights ago, Evening Standard. At Camberwell Magistrates Court last Tuesday, 2 women convicted of running a brothel at Tooting Beck were each ordered to do 200 hours service to the community.
Well, you deserve to win, but unfortunately it wasn't to be your fate today. It was Alan and Julia who scored a very good 15, but this week's winners are Francis and Tony with 18. Well done, gentlemen. Well, that's more or less it from this programme and from the series, but before we leave you, here's a cutting from the Europa Times.
Ron Newman of Chatham was sentenced to 140 hours of community service for beating his friend about the head with an acoustic guitar, because the friend consistently played the wrong chord in the chorus of the Eagles' song, Peaceful Easy Feeling.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Corran, Francis Ween, Tony Hawkes and Julia Langdon. The chairman was Barry Took, and the news was read by me, Charlotte Green. The programme was written by Ian Pattinson and Robert Fraser-Steele. The producer was Aled Evans.